tinker, tailor, soldier, sailor, rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief. Tinker, tailor, soldier, sailor, rich man, poor man, beggar man, thief.
We present John le Carré's Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. Adapted for radio in 7 parts by René Basilico. And starring Bernard Hepton as George Smiley. Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Spy. Part 2.
How much do I owe you?
That's £2 on the clock, sir.
Just one moment. There we are. Thank you.
Cab! Oh, thank you, sir.
I take cab.
Good Lord. George Smiley.
Roddy. My dear boy, how nice to see you after all this time. What have you been doing with yourself?
Can you get in or not?
No, I've changed my mind.
Oh, be my guest.
What a lovely surprise.
I was just popping into the club.
Excellent. We lunched together.
No, really.
I've just been stood up by some wretched press officer from Bongo Bongo Land. Can't say I'm sorry, mind.
No.
But I do so hate eating alone, don't you?
I don't know.
Splendid. A little tête-à-tête over the tête de veau. What could be nicer? Now, I want to hear everything, George. You must tell me about everything you've been doing with yourself.
A little bird told me you'd locked yourself up with the monks of St. Gallen studying medieval German manuscripts or something equally absurd.
I do study German manuscripts, but in the comfort of my own home, which is probably even more absurd.
Oh, it is, when you've such a delightful wife to distract you.
Yes, probably.
And how is the lovely lady?
Very well, thank you, Roger.
Good afternoon, Mr. Smiley.
Hello, Tom.
Can I take your coat for you?
Oh, please.
Haven't seen you for ages, sir.
Not since I retired.
A year now, isn't it, George?
Rather more, actually.
Oh, I dread retiring. I don't know what I'm going to do with myself.
I know the feeling.
Here, you'd better have mine, too.
Oh, thank you, sir.
You fit, George?
I think so.
Nice to see you again, Mr. Smiley.
You too, Tom.
I just hope they haven't let my table go.
They can say what they like. But the circus is not what it was, is it, George?
Well, things are bound to change.
Indeed. But not necessarily for the better, what?
I wouldn't know, Roddy. I'm out of it now.
Well, yes. Control's regime wasn't exactly crowned in glory, was it? Not in the later years.
More wine, Roddy.
Yes, thank you. Of course, you and Control were always very close, weren't you?
Well...
That's why you were thrown out. Why, Bill Hayden got your job.
My job?
Well, he is Percy Allerline's cupbearer, isn't he? Just the way you were once Control.
Well, what difference does it make now? Control's dead and I'm out to grass.
Ah. The word is, oh boy, that Control's still alive.
What utter rubbish.
No, truly, George. He's been seen. Willie Andrew Walther ran into him at Joburg Airport.
Roddy. Control was cremated, and his ashes were scattered in a garden of remembrance in the East End. I was there.
I always knew that Willie was a bloody liar.
It was nearly a year ago now. Control had been sick for a long time.
That Czech fiasco was really the final nail in his coffin, eh?
In more ways than one.
Yeah. Somehow, I can never quite believe in Percy Allerline as chief, can you?
I never really knew him as a force.
As Fiver, yes. An envious Kasker, hungry for Control's purple. But chief? What's his knack? Whitehall's at his feet. Special Percy committees with funny names and restricted access.
He always did have a reputation for being something of a politician.
Yes, but who's devilling for him, George? Who's winning him his reputation?
I have no idea.
Come on, George.
Please,
you must
have. You, Mr. Smiley?
No, thank you.
May I?
Please.
Sir?
Thank you. I'll sign the bill, if you please.
Right away, sir.
So who is it, George? Who's the clever boots? Is it Bill Hayden?
Roddy, I really don't know.
But you and Bill shared everything once upon a time.
It's been said.
But if it's not Bill, might it be Roy Bland, our shop-soiled hero from Redbrick?
Oxford, actually. Roy's St. Anthony's.
And your protégé, I seem to remember.
Once, a long time ago.
Esther Hardy seems an unlikely Eminence squeeze, wouldn't you say?
Probably.
Unless all Hungarians have crystal balls. So if it's not one of them, George, and Control really is dead.
He is.
Then who is there left? Except you.
You're barking up the wrong tree, Roddy. I told you, I'm out of it. I really have retired. Sorry. Can't be Anne. Damn.
Hello? 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 Who's there?
Don't shoot, George.
Peter, what are you doing here?
Licking your scotch. How the hell did you know there was someone here?
You missed a marker in the door.
There were two?
Afraid so.
My God, are you still that careful?
Old habits die hard.
Yes. There's something about letting myself in like that. Where's Anne, by the way?
In America.
Good. That makes it easier.
Makes what easier?
Look, what is all this about, Peter?
I'm acting under instructions, George. Very specific instructions.
Which are?
To take you to our Lord and Master at the Foreign Office.
Oliver Lacon.
No less.
He's your Lord and Master, not mine. Not any longer.
He wants to see you, George. My instructions are to take you to him.
Well, that hardly warrants breaking into my house, surely.
Yes, I'm sorry about that, but Lacon is adamant. No one at the circus should know or even suspect that I've made contact with you.
Hmm.
Well, George?
All right, Peter.
Good. We'll hang on till dark and then leave.
In that case, perhaps you ought to bring me up to date. I'm told things have changed quite a bit since I left.
And apart from that, everything operational is under one hat. London station. Bill Hayden's head of station, Roy Bland's his deputy, and Toby Esterhazy runs between them like a toy poodle.
And Percy Allerline presiding like the sun in splendor.
Yes.
And where do you fit into this whole new concept, Peter?
I don't. My previous associations with one George Smiley made me about as welcome as a pimp at a policeman's ball. Percy made it clear that I was lucky to have a job at all.
What job did he give you?
Head of scalp hunters out of Brixton.
Jim Prideaux's old job.
In name only.
What news of Jim Prideaux, by the way?
He's in quarantine. Been a bit of a political embarrassment ever since we got him back from Czechoslovakia.
Poor Jim. After all he's been through.
Yeah. It's getting dark. I think we ought to be on our way now, George.
Where did you leave the car?
Oh, it's just round the corner. Where you wouldn't spot it. Come on, let's go.
Is it my imagination, or are we heading in the wrong direction for the Foreign Office?
Lacon lives in Berkshire, doesn't he?
Ah, yes. We are being very circumspect, aren't we, Peter?
No, we're being very careful.
I don't want to force the issue, but if we're being that careful, I think it's time you told me why.
Do you remember a man called Tarr? Ricky Tarr? One of my scalp hunters.
Oh, yes. I remember Ricky. I had to vet him for recruitment to the circus.
I didn't know that.
He was gun running out east somewhere at the Jakarta resident, who was it?
Steve McElroy.
That's right, it was Steve, who found him drunk on the dockside and thought he was likely material. I had doubts, I must say.
I still do. Anyway, about 6 months ago, we got this flash requisition from the Hong Kong residency. They had a low-grade Russian trade delegation in town, and one of them was stepping wide in the nightclubs. They wanted a scalp hunter to make a crash approach, buy him or burn him.
I should think that was right up Tower Street.
That's why I sent him. He flew out the next night with an Australian car salesman's identity and two Virgin Swiss passports sewn into the lining of his suitcase.
Hoping the Russian preferred to be bombed.
Yes.
And did he?
No. A few days later, Tarr cabled no sale and booked himself on a flight home. He didn't make it.
You haven't heard from him since?
Not officially. The housekeepers gave him a few days' grace and then posted him AWOL. And Bill Hayden's been bending my ear ever since.
So, where is all this leading, Peter?
Tarr turned up out of the blue 3 days ago.
Oh.
He came straight to me, thank God, and not to anyone else. As soon as I heard his story, I rang Lacon at his home. Tarr's there now.
At Lacon's house?
There was nowhere else, George. We had to keep him under wraps, away from the circus.
So no one else knows he's back in England?
No one. Except for the babysitter, of course, a man called Thorne, one of my people.
Peter, all this has happened since I left the circus.
Yes.
So why am I being involved?
I'd rather Lakeham told you that himself.
You know, Peter, at moments like this, darkness can be something of a blessing.
How do you mean?
This house is quite monstrous, isn't it?
Well, not my style.
And they used to call it Gothic Camelot. I thought it quite out.
It's very... Well, well, hello, you two.
Hello, Oliver.
George, how good to see you again. It's been, well, how long now?
It's quite some time.
Indeed it has. Well, now, come on into the warm, won't you? There's a nasty nip in the air. Peter?
Thank you.
How's retirement suiting you, George?
Oh, well enough, thank you.
Here, let me take your coat.
Thanks.
And well, is she?
Very well, the last I heard from her. She's in America, you know. Yes, California. She's visiting a cousin there.
Ah. I expect Peter told you why you're here.
I sketched in the background for him. I thought he'd better let Tar tell his own story.
Then you better come on through. He's in here.
Hello, Mr. Smiley.
Ricky!
Long time no see, sir.
Oh, I thought you'd go. Very good, sir.
Ricky's been a naughty boy, see, Mr. Smiley. He can't be trusted without a babysitter now.
Well, I'll be right outside, should you need me, sir.
Do sit down, everyone. Make yourself comfortable.
Thank you.
I'll see you're not interrupted. And if there's anything you need, just give a yell.
Thank you, Oliver.
All right. Where do I begin?
I know why you were sent to Hong Kong.
So let's start with Boris, shall we?
Right then. Boris Kravchenko, born in Minsk, 1946, according to his visa application. And ripe for the picking. Right, Mr. Gillen?
According to Hong Kong station.
Bollocks. Begging your pardon, Mr. Smiley. He was a centre-trained hood, trailing his coat for a mug like me.
What makes you so sure?
Everything about the guy. It didn't add up. All day he was trailing around inspecting factories, the usual trade delegation routine. Then every night he was out on the town doing the night spots. And I mean every night. The local watchers were absolutely knackered. As soon as I laid eyes on the bloke, I knew it was bad news. To start with, how did the guy manage to get away every night? There's always a couple of gorillas on these jaunts who were supposed to keep the boys out of the flesh pots. And the way he was pushing foreign currency around, small-time trade delegate doesn't have that sort of currency.
Not normally.
On top of that, he had too much tradecraft.
Oh?
Boris was a pro, Mr. Smiley, no question. It was written all over him.
So you decided to abort the operation?
I cabled no sale and booked myself on the next plane home pretty damn quick.
And then forgot to get on it.
The plane wasn't leaving till the next day, was it? So I sort of... Well, I thought I'd burgle Boris's room.
Why?
I had to do something, Mr. Smiley.
Go on, Ricky.
The Russians were booked in at the Alexander.
It's a ramshackle old gin palace down on the Marble Road.
Anyway, I got into Boris's room, no sweat. And I was just standing there getting used to the dark when this woman starts talking to me. From the bed. Boris's wife.
I doubt that. They'd never let them both out of Russia at the same time.
A common law wife. Unofficial but permanent.
Ah, you can imagine it. Threw me for a minute finding her there.
But you thought of something.
You know me, Mr. Smiley. I'm not an amateur. I had a fallback story. I told her I was looking for Boris.
Very ingenious.
I played it like a quiet Aussie going ape because he'd had his girl and his money stolen by a lousy Russian who couldn't afford to pay for his pleasures.
And she bought that?
Only because she wanted to. I think she guessed who I... what I was from the start. But she was at her wit's end. She was in tears, in fact. And there was no one else to talk to.
And you appearing in her bedroom in the middle of the night was the answer to a maiden's prayer.
If you like, yeah. You see, Mr. Smiley, she told me there was nothing between her and Boris. They couldn't stand the sight of each other. He was out boozing and chasing the birds all night while she was sat in her room crying her eyes out and getting slowly plastered.
So when she found a tall, dark stranger standing by her bedside, she just clasped him to her bosom and wept on his shoulder.
Ricky does tend to have that effect on women, don't you?
I suppose. Irina was a plain kid. A bit blue stocking for my taste. But she had a hell of a pretty smile when she stopped crying. And she was ready to unpack. There was gold in her, Mr. Smiley. I just knew I'd struck gold.
I don't suppose it crossed your mind that, Irina, was it?
Yeah, Irina.
That she might have been playing a double game.
And suckering me into a honey trap.
It's been done before.
No way. The setup was all wrong. Oh, she was genuine. I stake my life on it.
I believe you, Ricky.
Yeah, well. Anyway, things just went from there. We met every day after that.
And did she unpack?
Not straight off. But I was damn right about Boris. He was the lead and Irina was the backup.
His and her act.
That's right. He was on the trawl for Hong Kong businessmen. Had a postbox job on the side for the Soviet residency. She ran courier, boiled down the microdots, and played radio for him on a high-speed squirt to beat the listeners.
She told you that?
Yeah. She was convinced I was a colonel of intelligence.
Mm.
In the end, I got her family history, her recruitment, training, Moscow Center, her lousy marriage, the lot. She was a bit in love with me.
My God.
She knew a hell of a lot about the circus.
Oh?
She kept on and on about Percy Allerline.
Allerline?
Said she had to talk to him. She had this secret, you see, this one big secret, and she'd only tell it to Allerline. No one but Allerline.
Didn't you find that rather odd?
Not really. It was the price of her ticket, wasn't it?
She was ready to defect, in other words.
Well, the way I see it, that was her only way out.
Yes. Yes, it probably was.
Hmm. Anyway, by that time, the official schedule for the delegation only had 3 more days to run. Then they were going back to Moscow.
You were running out of time.
Damn right I was. I crashed into the Hong Kong residency and put them on red alert before they were properly awake. Stood them too while I coded up a most urgent message to London on a one-time pad which I burned as soon as the transmission was complete.
So you were the only one who knew the text of the message?
In Hong Kong, yes.
And the message?
It gave an outline of Irina's career to date. The jobs she'd held at Moscow Center, her access, all that. It asked for full defector treatment, an RAF plane to get her out of the works.
I see.
And I asked for a message to be passed on to Mr. Gillam here, that I'd landed on my feet and wasn't just playing hooky for the hell of it.
I never got that message, George. Not a word.
How very odd. Who did you send this message to, Ricky?
I gave it the London station address group and graded it flash by hand of officer only.
That's the new formula for maximum limit. It's supposed to cut out the handling in the coding rooms.
Hmm. You said Irina had this one big secret.
Yeah.
Was it mentioned in your message?
I sort of hinted at it, yeah.
How exactly? I mean, what form of words did you use? Do you remember?
It was something like, claims to have information crucial to the well-being of the circus, but not yet disclosed.
Thank you. Go on, please.
Well, I hung around the residency for the rest of the day waiting for an answer. When nothing had come through by that evening, I tabled a flash follow-up.
Was it acknowledged?
Oh, sure. We read you. Stop.
That's all?
Nothing more. Not until noon the next day. There I was, sitting on the hottest property for years, and London let me sweat it out for more than 24 hours.
Mm.
And when they do come through, all they do is stall.
How do you mean?
Bloody stupid questions, like what sections did Defector work in? When inducted into Moscow Center? God, you'd have thought she was applying for a work permit.
Who signed London's cable?
No one.
A normal practice these days, George. Outsiders deal with London Station as a unit.
I see.
Anyway, I drafted off a reply and shot off for a 3 o'clock meeting with Irina. But she didn't show. We had a fallback for half an hour later. She didn't show there either. I went round to the Alexandra. The Russians had checked out. No reason given. So I took a cab to Kai Tak and checked flight departures. There'd been nothing. Absolutely nothing that could have been routed through Moscow for 2 days.
So they were still in Hong Kong?
Wait, George.
Well, I've got this contact at the airport. One of the Chinese hostesses. She told me an unscheduled Soviet plane had taken off just 2 hours before. 4 people boarded, and one of them was an invalid. A woman. In a coma. They had to carry her out on a stretcher. And they wrapped her face in bandages. Poor desperate cow.
Perhaps she was ill. Just possible. Perhaps she really was in a coma.
I wish I'd never sent that bloody cable.
Maybe the security guards found out about your little affair and removed her.
Yeah.
She might even have told Boris about it herself, taunted him with it. These things happen.
Yeah.
Especially if she'd been drinking.
Yes. I've jumped through all those hoops, Mr. Smiley, over and over again, but it won't wash. It didn't then. It doesn't now. Look. Can I have the cassette player in now, Mr. Gillen?
Sure. Oh, don't get it, George.
Irina is giving me so much dope on Moscow Center. Her training, trade craft, her setup on the Soviet residency in Hong Kong, and God knows what else, that I was having trouble taking it all down. So I bought her one of those miniature tape recorders, sort of fit in a handbag. I've handed two tapes to Mr. Gillen already.
Here we are, Ricky. I'll lead you to work it, okay?
Well now, Mr. Smiley. Irina and me, we had a couple of dead letterboxes. So, after the business at the airport, I checked them out. You know, just in case. This is what she left me. One tiny little tape. The last will and testament of Irina Shemishova. Quality's not brilliant because this isn't the original.
Oh? He copied it and put the original back in the dead letterbox.
I had my own welfare to think of, right?
The Moscow Center might not cut his throat if they thought he hadn't heard the tape.
Seems a reasonable working hypothesis.
Okay. Here goes then. Oh, and she calls me Thomas all the way through.
But Thomas was his Australian identity.
Thomas, listen to me. This is my gift to you in case they take me away before I have a chance to speak with the line. I would give you my life, Thomas, my body naturally. But this is all I have. Use it well, Thomas. Tell it only people who you trust. And do not trust anyone inside what you call circles, because no one can be trusted until riddle is solved.
So who could I trust?
For 2 years before I was attached to the trade ministry, I worked as a supervisor in the filing department at headquarters in Dzerzhinsky Street.
That's Moscow Center she's talking about.
I know.
God, work was so boring, Thomas. Atmosphere not happy. Although I was not married. In the same department was Elvis, as clerk. He was blonde, Thomas, like you. And I wanted him. He admired me very much, too. We worked many time night shift together. We begin to meet also outside work secretly because it's against regulations.
She was having an affair, okay?
Forgive me, Thomas. Sometimes only our body can speak for us. You should have appeared in my life earlier. We used to go also to room of Ivlov's cousin who was teacher at Moscow University. No one else was present. It was in teacher's apartment that Ivlov told me about a conspiracy. Perhaps made himself very important, very, I don't know, very masculine to me. Perhaps also to hold us together with his great secret.
We come to a new day. She kicks off with a lot of good morning, Thomas's love talk, prayers. I've marked the place here somewhere. She was a very religious woman. Funny, isn't it? You don't expect it in a commie. Boris has gone out early, so she's got a bit of time to herself. Okay.
Please.
Thomas, have you heard of Carla?
Who hasn't?
Carla is the most mysterious man in Moscow Center. Even Russians do not understand the meaning of such a name. He is the head of Directorate 13. He was very nervous to tell me this story, very frightened. He told me he once worked for Carlo in secret capacity, very, very secret.
Now we come to it.
Ivlov was stationed to London Embassy under cover of being driver and assistant coding clerk. But he had all the second job, work name Latin. He was secret assistant to Colonel Grigory Viktorov. Viktorov at London Embassy had work name Polyakov. His cover is
Polyakov, yeah. Just a minute.
he was secret assistant to Colonel Grigory Viktorov. And Viktorov at London Embassy had work name Polyakov.
Stop this.
He's...
P-O-L-Y-A-K-O-V. Is that right? Polyakov.
Near enough, I should think.
Okay, to go on.
Please.
Oh, his cultural attaché. To organize lectures to British universities concerning cultural matters in Soviet Union. But he's also from Directory 13. And his true job is to serve as British mole codenamed Gerald.
All right, so far?
Yes, thank you.
Go on.
Mole Gerald is object of deep conspiracy, Thomas. And do you know why? Can you guess?
Wait for it.
It's because Mole Gerald has penetrated deep inside British Secret Service. That's what we call circus. This is why you can trust no one, Thomas. Do you understand? One of the most important men in your circus is a Russian spy.